Good evening, everyone. You've tuned into Paradigm Shifters. And who are Paradigm Shifters? Usually delightful people, and we're just calling them wizards in a way. People who are making a difference in the collective of our species in this planet at this time in history, which is kind of a rambunctious time. It seems like the challenges are many. And one of the big challenges, and I do this in my healing work, one of the biggest challenges that we have is learning to empower ourselves in the face of all kinds of trances and so on. And empowering ourselves is what my paradigm shifter is really on about today. Terry Meyer of Convivium Renewable Energy is here to tell us all about wind power and other sources of power that you and I can use instead of using fossil fuels. So welcome to the show, Terry.
Thank you so much. Glad to be here.
I'm really excited about this subject, actually, you know. And you know what I heard the other day, and I know you're into windmills, right?
Mm-hmm.
You call them turbine?
Wind turbines are modern devices that convert wind into electricity. Windmills are devices that turn wind into mechanical energy, usually for grinding grain or also pumping water, but those are often called wind pumps as well. So
what are the Dutch ones we are all familiar with?
Those are windmills. Those were traditionally where you'd see the windmill on the horizon. That's where you take your grain, you know, hand it to them, get your receipt, come back the next day and go home with your sack of flour.
Oh, I'm glad we talked about that. So we're talking about wind turbines. We're talking about actually quite beautiful structures, aren't they?
I believe so. Many people do, and some people don't.
Yeah. And as they turn, they don't grind your wheat except by nature of the power they bring to
us,
right?
They make electricity, and my mom has a electric grain grinder in her kitchen, and so it does grind her wheat, but...
Okay, I heard an interesting story, because I think they're very, very interesting, and there's an area of California I used to drive through fairly often.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the whole...
There's a couple of areas like that. It was near Palm Springs or Altamont Pass, east of the Bay Area.
Yeah, and it's absolutely fascinating. You mm-hmm. drive by and there are all these... They're white, I think,
mm-hmm.
and very impressive. But one of my friends was telling me that she saw a show on TV, probably,
mm-hmm.
or an article. I think it was a show on TV about how these windmills or wind turbines had been applied to the use of some town. She said, in her memory,
mm-hmm.
that there's a town... And they put these in to provide the whole town's energy. But she said that the racket was horrendous and that the people were all complaining about it.
Hmm.
So I would like you to, because I haven't heard that up here in Bellingham.
Do you know if this was an older installation or a newer one?
I think it must be an older one because by the sounds of it, it was like 10 years or something.
Okay. Yeah. Well, you know, the wind industry has done a lot of evolving. The modern, you know, wind energy, besides grinding grain, was used for electricity 100 years ago as well.
It kind of makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Yeah. And the first rural electrification of the Midwest were these Jacobs wind chargers, where it would charge a battery and you'd have some electricity.
Hmm.
The electrification of the rural electrification happened, where there's all these utility public utility districts formed, and the grid stretched out to all these people who used to have to be self-sufficient, and the wind industry went into hiatus for a while. In the early 80s, it sprung up again in California with some really good incentives, and some say too good. It certainly caused a lot of exuberant activity that meant that a lot of lessons got learned as well.
So when you say incentives, I asked, I see it in two ways. One is, was the crunch being developed at the time where electricity was costing so much, or oil spills and so on were wreaking havoc?
Yeah, you know, if you remember the early 80s, there was the oil crisis in the late 70s, and Jimmy Carter came up and said, we're going to do something about this. And wind energy was one of them.
He was always a nice guy, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was. And bless his heart, Ronald Reagan kept up with it for a while. But a lot of lessons were learned. So maybe this was one of those situations where they got one of these designed a turbine that was quite loud, or they placed them inappropriately, you know, too close to homes, And that could have happened. You know, today, wind turbines, wind turbine noise is one of the environmental impacts of wind turbines.
Okay.
And it's something that is well modeled, and you know they measured on these turbines, and you can place them. Typically, turbines are designed to certain noise levels,
mm-hmm.
And a well placed turbine, you know, is not a problem. You will always I mean, they make a little bit of noise. It's a whooshing sound, a hush, hush, hush.
And where, like, when you say well-placed, does that mean proximity to buildings?
Proximity to places where people are living and are sensitive to it.
You need a half a mile?
No.
How about looking at our front yard, which is, what, 100 yards?
Yeah.
To the road?
You know, it's really a matter of taste. I mean, you said earlier, you know, I love the way they look. And if you love the way they look, you're not going to mind the way they sound. If you hate the way they look, you're going to hate the way they sound too.
But is the sound better, a little bit more gentle than it used to be?
Yeah, I mean, if they were describing it as a racket, then it sounds like there's something mechanically wrong or a poor design in those turbines. You know, a lot of gearbox noise or generator noise or grinding of the gears and, you know, these sorts of sounds. You know, the main sound that comes from a modern wind turbine is the aerodynamic sound, the whooshing. You know, some people describe it as wind in the trees or waves crashing or, you know, and other, you know, people who don't like it. Definitely beats the sound.
So who are you? Why are you working in this? And how long have you been at it?
I decided to go into renewable energy when I graduated school. I started getting...
Oh, you've been to school.
I have been to school. I started off getting an environmental science degree. Almost near the end of my degree, I had to pull some strings to get things changed. Decided I did not want to study environmental problems. I wanted to solve environmental problems.
Oh, right.
And I saw renewable energy as an integral way that was connected to many of our problems.
I agree. I just think it's one of the hugest steps we can take.
Yeah, it is huge, and it's also nothing. I mean,
what do you mean by nothing? That it recovers some of our innate.
I mean, we, as long as we continue to want more, need more, grow more. If we're consuming huge amounts of resources and they're renewable resources, well, we'll run out of those too. There's no silver bullet. There is no technical solution. My hope with renewable energy development, especially community scale renewable energy development, renewable energy where it is you that's seeing and hearing. Mm-hmm. The wind turbine. It is you that has to choose. Well, I can fit this much PV on my roof, photovoltaic panels. Mm-hmm. I can fit this much solar energy on my roof, but that'll only produce so much of my energy. Well, now, so the roof is a great place for solar panels, but covering your yard net isn't necessarily. You could have your garden there, and you can't mm-hmm. have it if you've got the solar panels there. Or I could put a big solar panel out on this ag land. And so then you're taking land out of agriculture to put solar panels on. And so there's this...
But there's all other thing. Here we are in Pacific Northwest where solar isn't always the most abundant thing, right?
Sure,
we have a lot of...
Well, the point I'm trying to make is that even though renewable energies are in one sense infinite, they're also finite and they do have some impact. And really, we need to... we need to learn to be modest in our needs and use our abundant resources effectively.
Mm-hmm.
And
I notice you have this wonderful interview on the website,
mm-hmm.
conviviumre.com, and it's under links, I think.
Yeah, under links.
But what I loved felt the passion for nature and, mm-hmm. and how you can use nature mm-hmm. in a loving, supportive,
productive
sharing.
Way. Yeah,
it's a sharing. It's an integration with nature, isn't it? Yeah.
Well, it's like forestry done right is people managing forest for both timber and wildlife and aesthetics
and air quality
and water retention and you can manage it all that way, but it takes attention and it takes and similarly, energy. There's so much energy around us.
Mm-hmm.
And we can be energy self-sufficient with renewables, you know, with care and attention. And it's a...
Let's just go back to, I don't want to lose mm-hmm. the whole question about the wind turbine mm-hmm. machine. So what got you into that? And what
So I decided I wanted to be into renewable energy when I grew up, right? Mm-hmm. And
Take it from me. You don't have to grow up.
Thanks. ask my wife. She says I haven't yet. So I started... looking for a job in the Pacific Northwest. I decided this was the climate I wanted to live in for renewable energy, and eventually did. And pretty soon, as my career went through a couple of twists and turns, I was in the wind industry because the wind industry was growing and there was money to hire people to do stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so even though I love run-of-stream microhydro, and solar energy has this great democracy to it. Everybody's got access to solar energy.
Mm.
Even though it's not as good here as it is in Arizona, it's still good.
We're going to come back to that.
My passion for being in the woods. Well, biomass energy is a great but wind is where I now have a level of expertise that I can make a living. And so that's how I got into it.
Hmm. And then you started a company. Did you start the company?
So, yeah, I've been working for a local company called Chinook Wind for a good chunk of my career.
Chinook,
mm-hmm. yeah. And recently, 2 years ago, started Convivium Renewable Energy, which
okay.
is a consulting firm with a more broad-based technology experience. We've got a wonderful solar electric.
So you have a variety.
A solar hot water guy,
okay.
a biomass guy,
okay.
an energy efficiency professional, education professionals.
Hmm.
And so, and it's structured also in a more.
So you do consulting as well as development.
The Convivium is. A consulting firm. That's what we
and
do.
And Convivium means, doesn't it mean?
It means Convivium is right. those. So Convivium is it's used in the slow food movement
okay.
when people get together and do something either a meal or like canning tuna or whatever together. It was the Last Supper was called a Convivium.
Oh, okay.
And I've seen a lot of definitions. The one I like to use is it's those. Gathered together, celebrating for a good cause,
uh-huh.
to do good. Yeah. It's like if you think about and
whole is greater than the sum of the parts. And
yeah,
all
you know
of them
if you think I don't want to get into Christian mythology too much, but if you think of Jesus and the apostles getting together and saying, okay, we're going to have the bread and wine, we're going to celebrate, but also we are starting on a really important and big mission.
Right.
You know, that's the feeling of, hey, we're doing something that's big, that's sacred, that's important, and we're going to have fun and be have a sense of togetherness about it.
And
so,
a real joint commitment.
That's right. So, and you know, it's
but
convivial,
always makes me
convivial
feel happy,
right?
Too. It's convivial. Yes,
yeah,
that's a great word. Yeah, I like that. I love the name of your company.
Thank you.
But it makes sense because I want to ask you about each aspect of it, like biomass.
Mm-hmm.
But back to the wind
okay.
first.
Yeah. So that company is also trying to live out others of ideals. Like I said, if you just look at the technical solution, it's not it. You've got to look holistically. There's so many problems that are caused because people say we need to do X, and they're so focused on X that. They forget about why. So somebody who's like, we need to get this legislation passed, but or education or something like that, and then but they're just being horribly wasteful of natural resources while they do it.
Right. Yeah.
You know.
I know what you mean.
You know.
Yeah.
So there's
got to look at the whole
integration.
Picture.
So Convivium.
That's the word integration. It's got to integrate with.
That's right.
With the natural.
So we're trying to also live some of our social ideals through Convivium.
Okay.
It's a collaboration of professionals. We didn't have the guts to put together a formal co-op arrangement, but we still run it.
But everybody there must have similar value structure.
That's right.
Meaning wanting to do
wanting to be independent, wanting to stay true to their values, but also be able to be a part of something bigger to provide a full featured service to people who need it. We do integrated resource planning for tribes and utilities and communities, mm-hmm. saying, people, somebody wants to know, what is renewable energy? Do we have any? If so, how do we get it? And how much will it cost us?
Yeah, and how does Joe Average, how does a normal person, if that's what we are here, mm-hmm. get involved and begin to be empowered by choice, by mm-hmm. Self-sustainability?
Well, there's a number of ways. One is just by having that voice and voting that way and so on and being a good part of your community.
Right.
The other is putting up your own renewable energy systems, solar right. panels, wind turbines, and so on. That's not something that I choose to be involved in, but other people I work with do. And as far as...
And why don't you? Is it just a preference? Or
I feel the biggest impact is in community-wide action.
Okay, you know, so that means that when you're going to do wind power, you...
So that gets to the second business that I've started, which started about a year and a half ago.
Okay.
I guess Convivium was 2.5 years ago. So this is a year later. We started Cascade Community Wind Company. And Community Wind Company is a developer of community-scale wind energy projects. And what we do is we go to a landowner, say, do you want wind on your land? Here you can make this much money, and you're doing this much good, et cetera, and make sure that the neighbors are on board and aren't going to mind living next to a wind turbine and provide that education as well as provide some benefit. We pay part of the neighbor's power bill. With the proceeds from the wind turbine, and then what we do is we.
I mean that the wind turbine facilitates the power needs enough to have some left over to cover the neighbors.
Yeah, we build community wind turbines. We build turbines that are big enough to produce power for many homes.
Okay. How many
commercial scale turbines? Our smallest turbine, if you count energy efficient homes, 45 typical homes, mm-hmm. about 15.
15 wind turbines?
15 homes.
Okay.
And if you count, a decadent, McMansion type home, maybe 5 of them. But, several homes.
And how many wind turbines would you use for that?
That's one small, what I consider a small turbine. It's a 100 kilowatt turbine.
Okay.
Located in a really fairly windy spot. This is one of our first projects going to be coming online this summer.
Great.
And what we do is we allow people to subscribe to that turbine.
Okay.
For an upfront fee, they can say, okay, I know that the biggest cost in making renewable energy projects happen is the upfront cost, is the capital cost, because it takes other energy sources. Well, mm-hmm. the initial stuff doesn't cost that much, but you've got fuel costs as you come on. Renewable energy, fuel's free, but you've got your initial build.
Is it a building? What does it look like?
It's a wind turbine. It looks like a normal commercial wind turbine.
Okay.
It's three blades, tall tower, up in the air, catching the wind turbine.
It looks very simple.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And then how much distance do you have to have from, say, the 15 houses or the 5 houses? How much distance
right.
do you need to make it?
What we do is we put it onto the grid. Mm-hmm. So it can be anywhere, basically. The grid is a great magical tool that, once it gets on, you don't know where the electrons go. You just have to use accounting to say where they go, right? What we do is we allow people to pay some of that upfront cost, and mm-hmm. then for the next 20 years, they get a percentage of the power that turbine produces, both credited to them in the form of the renewable energy credits, the greenness of it, but also in power bill savings. So
can they mm-hmm. actually cover all their power needs with it?
Yeah. Yeah, if they buy enough. I mean, and mm-hmm. look at your power needs. Look at how much you need, or you subscribe for the minimum you can subscribe for because you want to be involved and you want to get your feet wet, or you subscribe for your mother and your whole family because you're so excited about it.
So, but essentially, could you have covered all the power needs for 15 houses with one wind turbine?
Yeah.
Really? Hey.
Yeah, and that's the small one. The big
and
one.
So how much does it cost if
houses,
I were going to go buy it at Macy's?
No.
This is all something
you need to do. You know, you need a professional developer. And there really aren't very many professional developers in that size range because big wind farms make more money. There's a few in the Midwest.
Okay, so how much, can you give me a ballpark just for the one? I'm kind of paying attention to this 15 houses.
Uh-huh. Yeah, sure.
If these people wanted to link arms and develop something together, would it be like $50,000, $100,000?
The total project cost for one of these first turbines is about $350,000.
Okay.
There are federal incentives that, you know, when we put the pieces together, cover about half of that.
Okay.
And then, so the other half of that would need to be covered by those people. So if you take $150,000, 15 households, $10,000 a pop, and... So you're looking at that for your power for the next 20 years.
And so, ultimately, you make your money back pretty fast, I would say.
We project people will get about twice as much in power bill savings as they put in originally over that 20 years.
Oh, wow. Okay. And so you haven't really got a long-term record to pick on yet, do we?
No, we don't. This is all.
So what's the community doing with it? Is the community excited?
Well, we sold most of our first project, and our second project's still wide open, and it takes a conversation like you and I are having, and then a follow-up conversation each subscription I want to sell. So that's not going so fast. I think once we've got the turbines up and running, and
no, because people like me, I mean, I love the idea, but I'm kind of overwhelmed. How do you start? And here we live in a very beautiful environment. Could we have one out here?
Yes. We're
outside of Bellingham, for those of you who don't know.
Yeah. Yes, you could have one out here. Currently, the Whatcom County Council is responding overly much, I feel, to some NIMBY concerns on a project that I proposed and then proposed to withdraw as soon as I found out the neighbors didn't want it. But... at that time, they were galvanized and decided to stop wind turbines in Whatcom County, pretty much.
So let's talk about the political aspect of it. Okay. I know it's not a popular thing, but this kind of thinking of wanting to do self-sustaining power base is a really huge political problem these days, isn't it?
Yeah.
So is that what you're encountering?
It's the dynamic of many people would prefer, and maybe it's not a conscious preference, but it's a preference in the way they truly act, would prefer a large environmental impact elsewhere or that they can't see,
right,
versus a small environmental impact, which is directly to them. So if they have the sight of a wind turbine on the horizon, or on certain days they can hear a whooshing sound, or there's some more traffic on their road, or whatever the impact is to them, that trumps the idea that, okay, I'm not burning coal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Puget Sound Energy, which is our utility, is 40% coal-powered.
I know you were saying that when I heard you with your delightful talk one day.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of shocking, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's.
So what it is a matter of people waking up and wanting to take the steps to make the change, and yet people don't want their security disrupted, do they?
That's exactly. So, you know, and what I'm finding with these turbines is a lot of it is. This rural lifestyle, residential contingent versus actual farmers and foresters who are used to using the land productively, and urbanites who want to see, you know, these projects going on in the rural lands because it supplies them. I'm looking out at your place. It's gorgeous here. You are a rural lifestyle residential person, right? You're not using your land to produce something. You're using your land to have a beautiful place to be.
I have veggies in the backyard.
I understand. And again, it's only some subset of that group, but I'm finding that group of people to be the most anti to community and wind energy projects.
Oh, that's interesting, because maybe we want to live in a little bit of isolation, is that?
Yeah, and you've got this idea of what the rural lifestyle is. I want to live next to this 3,000-acre ranch, which sold me 3 acres to build my little house on. And I want to see the ranch, and I want to see the barn, and I want to see the silo. That's what I bought. But when that rancher then goes and says, okay, this time I'm not going to make that extra money because we had a bad year by selling another 3-acre parcel. I'm going to make that money by putting up these wind turbines and make my operation more sustainable, add another crop I'm harvesting with this wind energy. That's not part of the visual image.
Yeah, like, don't you? Yeah.
That they were looking for. And so now this rural lifestyle residential unit out there is now causing problems for that rancher who would like to continue innovating and using his land productively as he's done or she's done for centuries. They're, the farmers are not Luddites or antiquated. They're very modern. You know, these great tractors. You know, old barns go down, new barns go up. Mm-hmm. You know, that they're there to make the land productive and to feed us and to give us our wood and to give us our textiles and so on. And so, so the people who do that kind of, I'm going to go live in the country and have my nice thing, typically have a good amount of leisure time and a good amount of money, which means they have a decent amount of political influence.
So the other question is, like all over the world, it seems to be necessary to get, well, that's my political statement, and maybe that's not what the show is about, but I keep thinking it's essential for the growth of our species to be more self-sustaining. Am I not right there?
It totally is. Yeah. It totally is. And it gets back to this idea of responsibility. Okay, I use electricity.
Yeah.
I should have to see the source of my electricity, or I should be okay with seeing the source of my electricity.
Right. And we also have a polluted globe. I mean, there's a lot. So when you talk about, I know these aren't particularly your subjects, but what about biomass? I mean, I'm kind of interested as you're talking about all these different aspects of being in a really rich nature like the Pacific Northwest.
Every renewable resource has some environmental impact. And produces electricity at a much cleaner, in a much cleaner, lower impact way than our current sources, excluding the big dams, which, as long as you discount the fact that certain streams don't have fish in them anymore, you know, are clean now, and those dams aren't going away. They're not having additional impact. And they do make improvements to the dams, and some dams come down, and there's progress being made at that front. But biomass is, you know, you're burning wood chips, basically.
Oh, okay.
And so there's some emissions. Mm-hmm. There's some air quality stuff associated with it, but there's great technology for minimizing that. You're using those wood chips for that use as opposed to some other use.
Would you also use that to create ethanol?
There is some thoughts and some progress in cellulosic ethanol production. Mm-hmm. It's a ways off. Mm-hmm. But
it's part of the same thing. It's wringing out the stuff.
Yeah, it's biomass is totally renewable. Mm-hmm. And again, you have to look at it and do it wisely, so you're not taking all the biomass out of the woods and there's nothing left for nature woodpeckers to eat,
right?
You know, whatever, you know. Trees or purpose-grown crops or waste from, you know, urban wood waste, crushed pallets, whatever. Right now the city of Bellingham burns their biosolids, the solid material they get out of their wastewater, and just vents it. I mean, they could be doing the same thing and getting energy out of it. They could be digesting it to make energy, and also there's all those nutrients going to waste. So that's a situation where locally we are not using our resources as best we could.
So once again, I want to ask you, well, then what would a person do who wanted to, say you've got a wind turbine and you start paying attention to biomass as well, what would be incorporated into a lifestyle for that? And is that politically frustrating as well?
Sure.
And why? Because of change?
Yeah, it's different. It's new. It's I think you talk about this. Hey, empowering ourselves to be a part of the solution, right?
Yeah.
I think there's some fear of that. There's some resistance to that in itself that happens around these types of things. Technologies like wind power, biomass, just about everything but solar energy, are things that really are best done at a community scale.
Okay.
And so we need to make decisions as communities. This is kind of the driving force I'm finding of my career, my work, is this idea of how do we empower ourselves. One is, okay, I see that community wind projects can happen, we can do it, 15 people get together and say, yep, I want a wind turbine, and make a new wind turbine happen. They've done it, as long as they have the right help. And that right help requires a lot of skills that there's not that many people that have. Cascade Community Wind has those skills, and so it's our...
So you go out as a consultant, and you...
Well, we go in as a developer, and so we make sure that, for a landowner, we can make it not cost them anything to put up a wind turbine, and so we find these subscribers elsewhere to make it happen, or loans, or investors. I mean, there's backups to the subscriber model. But, so that's one aspect is, okay, people need to be able to choose to make renewable energy happen for themselves, and they need help to do that. We're going to do that. The other is as communities deciding to understand what renewable energy resources you have, what they're going to cost, and create plans for getting to them and being able to make a commitment to getting them. One of the things I think you've heard of me talk about before is this idea of a community, and in this case, Whatcom County, producing all of its energy locally and renewably.
Mm-hmm. I've heard that from people, not just you. Actually, I've heard it from a number of people who idealize that.
Yeah. Well, it's me and some of the other Convivium professionals sat down, for a pizza dinner at La Fiamma and on the napkin, or drawn out and said, look, we've got enough energy here in Whatcom County to supply our needs. This is how much energy we use. This is how many cows we've got and how much cow power we could get if we did a really aggressive
like
solar.
Like a methane. Oh.
Like a methane digester. In fact, there's a new one going in near Linden right now. It's under construction as we speak.
We'll talk about that in a minute, because that's interesting.
And so we could do it. So, well, how much would it cost? We don't know. What specifically would it look like? What would that mix really look like more than the back of a napkin? Well, we'd have to figure that out. And how do we get there? What are the political, educational
hurdles
stuff, that, business hurdles that we're going to need to get over to get there? But, the technology exists today. Mm-hmm. No new technology with wave or improved solar power or whatever new energy sources. We don't need any of that. There's technology today to convert resources in Whatcom County to enough energy to supply the county.
Do we have an eco-village here?
No, we don't.
I was talking to someone yesterday from Ithaca, New York, and apparently they've got a tremendous eco-village going, which is... Because while you're talking, I'm going, well, what we need is places where we can go and experience...
The waterfront district
the new place is being recreated.
Recreated down at the port where they've taken GP out and now they're going to redevelop into residential and commercial. That could be you've heard of net zero buildings.
Mm-hmm.
That could be a net zero community. They've got solar, they've got wind, they've got a hydroelectric tap up to Lake Whatcom, and just use of water that complements other uses could create a lot of electricity from that. They've got a big natural gas fired power plant that used to provide heat to GP. That could be providing heat to the community through a district heating system, and then the goal. I haven't looked into what the technology specifically would need to be, but a biomass gasification and then run through that system could...
What's a biomass gasification?
It's a fancy way to burn wood chips.
Okay.
Instead of just burning them, you smolder them and turn them into a gas first, mm-hmm. and then you take that gas away and you burn it like you would a natural gas. That's a way to provide both green electricity and green heat. Mm-hmm. So you could really, really address that issue there. So there are potentials for that, but there's nothing really like that in Whatcom County. The goal,
but it's sitting right there as ideas that can be fulfilled.
That's
right.
That's right.
Enough people get behind them.
And Whatcom County could, on an energy, on an electricity basis. Do that.
For all of the county could have enough. Yeah. Energy provided
That's
by
right.
being
and this is energy.
So
There's a difference between energy and power. You know, it's going to be produced when it's produced, and we're still going to need the grid to accept extra and to provide.
And the grid is when you're talking about the grid. I meant to illuminate that a little bit ago for people who don't know that term very well. How would you express that?
The grid is all you see the wires out by the road right in front of us.
Right.
That's the grid, and it ties to a substation, but then goes to bigger wires that go. Down to Seattle and over the mountains and to the natural gas-fired plants, to the coal-powered plant. There's this grid of wires.
Keeps the flow going through all areas.
And it balances production with consumption. And if we were to regionally produce all of our energy, that is doable. It gets a lot more expensive to try to do that and balance our consumption with production all the time. But that's where the grid comes in. It accepts extra when we need it, and it gives us extra when we need it.
So you're saying you're not really adverse to staying tapped in?
No, it's a huge asset. The electrical grid is a great way to share around the country. But if we become energy neutral as a community, that's something. We've proposed a study that's gotten some traction around the county and is still kind of building momentum to study exactly that. What are the resources? How much will they cost? How do we get there?
It's kind of an exciting subject, isn't it?
Oh, it's
very
huge. If we had a concrete document like that that said, here's how you get from plan A to B, and maybe we find out that really it's going to be too expensive to get to 100%, but we could get to 50. We'll take it, you know. We're at, single digits right now, That's one aspect, and really, unfortunately, only addresses about a third of our carbon impact. As North Americans, approximately a third of our carbon impact comes from electricity use.
Right.
Approximately a third comes from vehicle use.
That's oil.
Oil primarily, yep. And approximately a third of it comes from heating, natural gas, cooking, that sort of thing. So. We know that in 10 years we have the technology to get rid of that one-third of electricity and have some overlap into transportation with plug-in hybrid electric vehicles, into heating with this cogeneration plant I was talking about where you're providing district heat.
Now, what is cogeneration? You want to explain that briefly?
Cogeneration is when you're producing both heat and electricity with a plant. You can do that, and biomass is – actually, most biomass plants that exist are cogeneration plants.
So you're saying, like, when you use biomass, you're – maybe even smoldering the stuff, but you're actually turning the product into something that
if you think of your car, you're burning a fuel, but you have tons of waste heat. There's the radiator, the exhaust is hot, you've got the radiator trying to blow off heat. Well, any other combustion technology is like that, whether it's a power plant or a vehicle. If you can use that heat, that waste heat, then you've just used much more of the utility in that fuel. Many sawmills have a cogeneration plant where they take the steam, the waste heat from the plant that's burning wood chips to make electricity, and use that to run their kilns to dry the wood. So they take care of a big heat load and create electricity at the same time.
And that's old. I mean, this is really not new.
Yeah, that's been going on for decades. For over a century.
So I'm thinking of the olden days when we used to have a wood stove or a sawdust hopper.
Uh-huh.
We had a sawdust hopper and a wood combination stove with a water tank behind it that was all part of the same system. It's like that.
It's like that. You weren't making electricity with it, but you were doing hot water as well as cooking heat, as well as,
heating the house. That
as well as heating the house, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So...
I must be really old because I don't know anybody who knows sawdust hoppers, but...
Oh, well, they still do it in Europe.
Really?
Yeah, they'll dump the wood chips and it goes down to a boiler in the basement that's doing that. But yeah, district heating is an awesome thing that we really should get back into. I would love to see building codes that say, okay, if you're going to put in a development of more than X number of houses, you have to have a district heat system that's renewably fired. That'd be awesome.
Wouldn't that be great?
You know, and so it's things like that that are really, as a community, we're making decisions that, okay, we need to go to the next step.
What about you? What do you have?
What do I heat with? I heat with a wood stove.
Okay.
And
what, do you have wind power at your house?
No. Where I live doesn't have great wind. I'm about to have a subscription to a community wind project, though.
Yay! So that what you're saying is you choose the place to put the turbine where the winds are stable, regular, and to be planned.
You know, solar's great in that you pretty much have the sun everywhere.
Come on, I've been living here for quite a while. And as long as we don't have much sun.
Well,
we have solar lighting our staircase, and at nighttime, guess what?
Right,
stumble.
Well, some of those devices aren't that great. But
that's probably
the thing is that in the Northwest, and I have to Dana Brandt is our solar guy, and he's awesome, and he tells us in his speeches, yes, we have lots of cloudy days, right? We also have really short nights in the winter and really long, short nights in the summer, or short days in the winter, long days in the summer. When do we have, like, we've had this month of clear weather.
It's lovely.
Well, it's also when our days are longest. Yeah. So our actual hours of good sun are comparable to many places in the world that have really intense solar programs, like in Germany.
And shorter days.
Yeah.
Oh, no, Germany's probably like
that. Yeah, but, mm-hmm. but, you know, but it's not as bad as you might think. Basically, your intuitive sense that solar stinks here is...
No, it stinks. It just seems a very expensive place if you're not going to be able to get enough.
Solar energy is beautiful in its democracy. Mm-hmm. It's not so great in its cost, mm-hmm. and the ways that they make solar affordable is by subsidizing it a ton.
Okay. Right.
You don't necessarily need batteries.
Oh, really? I thought you needed it to collect.
No, they have direct grid tie, but then you're connected to the grid. You don't get any self-sufficiency or independence from the grid. You just when the grid's on, which is most of the time, you're pushing power out to the grid. So they have batterless solar systems, but
you're pushing power out to the grid. So
if you're not home,
you get paid back for that, don't you?
Yeah, Washington and most states have net metering rules.
So wait a second. Now, if you were doing whatever you wanted to do, and you wanted to be self-sustaining, you would probably put a combination of these things together, would you not?
That's right. That's right. And
make it convivial.
Yes, there you go. But it's tough and expensive to do on your own. It's easier to do as a community, and it's easier to do as a broader community connected to the whole grid, as a national community or as a West Coast community. If you think about the grid, the entire west of the Rockies is basically on the same rig, on the same grid.
Oh, okay.
So it's where was I?
I was asking about the combination of things, and you were saying it was pretty expensive to be doing all of it yourself. You need to be thinking community.
Yeah.
See, here's another thing. This is like diversion, but not really, in that getting people to think in a community consciousness is a pretty big deal these days, isn't
it? That is the big deal. My hope is that the 10% of us that are really into it can mobilize the 60% of us that are willing to go there to overcome the 20% that don't give a damn and the 10% that are against, you know, making this sort of progress in one way or another.
Well, it just seems interesting that, and this is a slight jump as well, but oil is a huge, huge addiction for a lot of us, and it's got a lot of, like, bad taste in a lot of people's mouths.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it a way out of that whole thing?
I'm so glad that plug-in hybrid electric technology, electric vehicles, are finally coming together. I mean, and ostensibly there's going to be a great number of vehicles available at the end of this year.
And too many to be just knocked off the...
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. The Chevy Volt is back, you know, and that's an all-electric vehicle.
Oh, good.
And that bridges the gap between... It's really easy to make renewable electricity. It's still pretty difficult to make renewable liquid fuels at the prices we're used to paying for liquid fuel.
Right.
So that's a huge thing. And
but you know what? That might shift people's consciousness massively. You know what I mean? It's like we're talking paradigm shifters. There are things that make such a change in the way the society works that it can shift the fear focus.
Yeah, but you know, people still need to decide to get their electricity renewably. And there's a number of ways of doing that.
But they probably feel like it's too inconvenient. They won't be able to do it.
Well, certainly putting solar panels on your roof and or maintaining your own wind turbine is horribly inconvenient. You have to be really into it. Solar panels can be made pretty easy, but still, you have to decide. You have to work with a contractor. You have to make it happen. The utility green energy programs are easy. You just
really?
Check a box. Check a box, really? And now you're getting green power. Yeah, really? You should have Bob run get a power bill. I'll show you where you just sign up for green power and you're getting green power. A lot of people tend to...
That means we're getting power from turbines?
It commits a certain amount of renewable energy that's being produced to you.
So checking that box is a very strong political...
Yeah, it says, hey, there's demand. You don't get much for it. You check the box, you get more. You spend a little extra money.
Right.
You're being powered by renewable energy. But it's not necessarily producing something new. It's something that's already built someplace. You don't really know what it is. It's a great first step.
Hmm.
What we've tried to do with Cascade Community Wind is a intermediate step, and in some ways a step that's I feel synergistic of putting up your own system and just checking the box. It's fairly easy. You have to write a bigger check, and it's right up front. But you save that money. You get something for the money besides the greenness.
You get something for over a long period of time.
Over a long period of time. You save about twice as much as you put into it over time.
Yeah.
And you're being renewably powered. And you're creating a new renewable energy device, which has your name on the plaque at the bottom as one of the subscribers saying, you know, you're getting renewable energy from this device. Here you go. And
that might make us feel good. When we bought our Prius, we felt really like we had done something.
Done something
for
the
planet.
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly. And but you know, it's so that is a next step. My hope is that you know, as long as we're relying on individual choices. I mean, recycling is pretty popular now, right?
Mm-hmm. But then you hear a lot of reports on the fact that it's not working, it's too expensive, it doesn't actually recycle. And I hear all these naysayers.
The main problem, not the problem, but the main attribute that I want to bring up about recycling is that it relies on individual people's decisions, which is incredibly powerful.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it means getting up over 50% recycling penetration is going to be tough and we'll never hit 100%.
We'll
never hit 100% recycling penetration as long as we rely on people's decisions to recycle or not, right?
Yeah.
Whereas as a community, if you do that 10-60-20-10 kind of thing where you say, okay, we're going to do this, well, once you're producing electricity in your community, it's being produced. You can hit it 100%. You can, by using the power of the community coming together and...
And when people realize that it's regular and it's not some fly-by-night thing that's going to keep you in and out of the
service. Exactly. That's a given.
Mm-hmm.
It's got to be as regular as the. As,
it's going to take a lot of education, enthusiasm, and cheerleading and sharing. But I'm really thinking.
Well,
it's
and doing a study like this is part of that. It's like saying, okay, yes, it really is possible. Yes, it's really not going to cost too much. These sorts of things.
Wouldn't it be nice if you could get like all the city government? All the buildings and everything run by it. I think that'd be a great way to show.
Yeah. It's.
So what do? Do you go to schools? Do you go to universities? Do you talk a lot?
Like I try to get paid for the stuff I do.
Sometimes the heart doesn't make the most money.
Yeah. I just got done talking to some students about.
Because I imagine a lot of young people that really care.
Yeah. It's you know.
There's a lot of older people that really care too.
I'm an engineer. You know, my parents were activists. I try not to be an activist. I try to implement the solutions and as a consultant and even as a developer help other people to do what they want to do.
Mm-hmm.
using the skills that I've developed. I've got skills that people need if they really want to understand and implement renewable energy.
Mm-hmm.
And so I work with tribes, I work with utilities, I work with municipalities, I work with community groups, I work with other developers to help them make it happen in a real hard nuts and bolts kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a study like I talked about for Whatcom County, there's communities all over the world. You know, there's some communities that are, there's just a big city in them, and they're never going to produce 100% of their own. They need to stretch out further.
Right.
And there's other communities that are so sparsely populated for their land and resource base that producing 100% of the renewable energy would be a snap, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there are plenty that are producing way more than they consume. If you think about some of these West Texas counties that have the giant wind farms on them,
mm-hmm.
like their local load is way less than the wind farm. At the same time, they're not necessarily using that. It's going on to the big transmission system.
What I heard, that it's a big joke in the sense that those guys aren't using it.
Yeah,
going to California.
That's right. And that's the great thing about community projects is they go into lines like you see across the road and are used locally as much as you can say an electron is used locally.
What about this big rumor that somebody was going to do a whole tunnel of windmills all the way up through wind turbines all the way up through the country? Who was that?
T. Boone Pickens.
Yes.
Yeah.
What happened to that?
He
shot his face off with a...
He was very enthusiastic, didn't really understand the wind industry. Yes, there's tons of wind energy potential through the Midwest. And parts of what he proposed make sense, and part of them, what he proposed are just, you know...
So he didn't have it logistically grounded
Every once in a while, somebody will come up with something really big and we're going to do this huge thing. And, you know, especially when somebody's got a lot of money. People love people with a lot of money. You know,
if they have ideas and you know they'll bring them.
It's that dang salvation thing. You're always looking for the government, the corporation, the bajillionaire to solve your problem for you.
And what you're saying is the power's within ourselves.
It's within ourselves. It's within our neighbors. It's within deciding. You know, like I said, 10 years, Whatcom County could be 100% renewable.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's
going to take community consciousness, and
I think that's the point I was getting to, is that 10 years after we decide to go that direction, how long will it take to decide to go that direction?
Right.
That could be 10 years in itself. So now we're up to 20.
I'm optimistic. Got to talk about it.
Yeah, it's the making decision, the decision part. Exactly. We could decide by a year from now. You know, we could decide to do this study, get it done, and 2 years from now be ready to really implement.
Hmm.
And it's totally conceivable.
Well, unfortunately, I have to bring this to a close. But where can people now, this, you're in the Pacific Northwest, so this is kind of a limited question for some of you out there, but where can people hear you talk? Where can people learn more about it?
You know, check out CascadeCommunityWind.com.
CascadeCommunityWind.com.
We've got a blog there. Cascade Community Wind Company, I believe, has a Facebook page.
Mm-hmm.
ConviviumRE.com has some good information.
Yeah, I enjoyed that. Now, when you said it has the Community Wind has a blog, that means people can interact with you there?
Yeah, you can sign in and put your posts on that. You know, as we give updates on our projects.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't do speaking tours. If you really want to hear me talk, hire me.
Okay.
He doesn't come
cheap either.
and we'll get. You know, I worked for the Lopez Community. Lopez Island Community Land Trust, and help them do a study for their housing development there.
Great.
You know, if there's a group, an entity that really wants to understand their renewable energy, that's what we do.
Hmm.
And if you're interested in saying, yeah, I wanna be a part of putting new wind turbines in, then Cascade Community Wind's a great resource. And just come on by. We're, you know, if you happen to be in the Northwest, we're at 1155 North State Street, Suite 424.
I'll see you right in Bellingham.
Yeah,
great. And so one of the things I'm enjoying also is knowing that you have connections with people who are working with different facets of this as well. I think we all need to know that, too.
Yeah. Well, you know, my hope is if we figure out how to deal with our energy scene ourselves, maybe we'll figure out how to deal with things like healthcare and education and agriculture and all of these issues of our day.
Mm-hmm. Which handed ourselves over to a system that was maybe questionable,
right.
Then we lost the sense of self.
I would love for us to get in the habit of solving our own problems as communities.
That's a great way to end. And unfortunately, we have to end, but I'm really grateful for the time we've spent.
Well,
you got me going. Yeah, it's been wonderful. So this is Veronica Entwistle saying, check out Convivium RE and Cascade Wind.
Cascade Community Wind.
CascadeCommunityWind.com.
Yeah.
Now let's all get involved with empowering ourselves, and that's what my whole work is about, too. So if you'd like to feed me back on Terry Meyer and other paradigm shifters that you're thinking about, or if you'd just like to talk to me for a session, please email me, Veronica at VeronicaAntwistle.com. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll talk to you soon. Good night.